Welcome back to the podcast for Cultural Reformation, brought to you by the Ezra Institute, where we equip cultural leaders in Christian philosophy, worldview, and apologetics to build the kingdom of Christ and to bring the lordship of Christ to bear in every sphere of life. I'm Nate Wright. As you know, we're not joined today by familiar faces, Joe or Michael, but I am joined by anybody who's been following the Institute for some time. Ted Fenske will be a name that you know, and his face hopefully is one that you have seen. He was involved in our most recent Mission of God conference, both out west and the one in Ontario, as we were talking in December about redeeming sexuality. He's also one of the Ezra Institute fellows, and he's the fellow for medicine and public Christianity. He's a clinical professor with the Division of Cardiology at the University of Alberta, and a staff cardiologist at the CK Heart Center. And he's also an elder at Fellowship Baptist Church in Edmonton. And so he's joining us today. Thanks so much for being here, Ted.
It's a real privilege. Thank you, Nate.
Yeah, we got to do some ministry at the Mission of God conference last year. We get to do some more ministry this coming summer. So if there are any young people listening or any listeners to the show who have young teenagers, the Worldview Youth Academy this year in Canada is July 28th to August 2nd. Ted will be there. I will be there, and we'll be hoping to minister to your teenagers there. So make sure you sign up and reserve a spot, because I know it is filling up quickly, and you'll get to spend some time with great fellows of the Institute like Ted Fenske. Now, Ted, at Mission of God, we talked a little bit about the topic was sort of redeeming sexuality. We talked a little bit about just the trajectory of the sexual perversion in our culture. We talked about reclaiming a biblical view of sex, of gender roles, of marriage, all those kinds of things. And your talk was really sort of centered around just the LGBT movement. As a doctor, you sort of have a unique perspective in that area, seeing not only as an elder at the church, seeing the spiritual rebellion against God, but sort of the creational rebellion against God as well, with a lot of the things going on in medicine. And today we're actually going to talk about something that I think we're both actually very passionate about. I'm a pastor, and so I disciple a lot of young people, and pornography tends to be the thing in our churches that too few pastors are willing to kind of talk about, because it's uncomfortable to talk about. It's uncomfortable to call people out on it, but you and I were just talking before we hit record here. This is a far more pervasive issue than most Christians realize. So why don't we just start by talking about why this, you know, as the fellow for public medicine and public faith, as a doctor and also as an elder, like how is it that this topic has become such an area of passion for you?
You know, thank you, Nate. You're right in terms of the concern here, and you know, typically our mode in the church has been not to talk about these kinds of things. You know, we come out of the Victorian era. You know, where we didn't show any ankle. You know, we didn't talk about breast meat or leg meat. We talked about light and dark meat. You know, and so there was really a movement away from any kind of discourse in this regard, and so it was a taboo topic, and sexuality in general. You know, and this is a real shame, because when we open the Bible up, the Bible's not silent about sexuality. You know, it's actually pervasive through the cover to cover, and it's God's beautiful gift to us. And you know, there's my favorite reference is looking at Song of Songs by Solomon, and just where we see, in this allegory poem, the beauty of this the sexuality between husband and wife. You know, Solomon wanted his wives, and really as an allegory then to our intimate relationship with Christ. You know, and it is a good thing. And what we're seeing here with in terms of the LGBT, but also even as it apparently in the pornography issue, is we're seeing a distortion and a terrible view of God's good gift, and a reduction really onto something quite profane. And so it's so good that we can talk about these things and have opportunities like this with the podcast, and have opportunities in our church circles to have connections with people who struggle this way. And, you know, I was mentioning earlier, how pervasive the problem is of pornography. It came to my attention within my cardiology practice. You wouldn't expect that necessarily. You know, we typically work above the belt, you know, and listening to the heart and this kind of thing. But one area of I've been involved with the last over 20 years now is what we call erectile dysfunction. And erectile dysfunction became kind of in the more highlighted because therapies were became available. And you know, it's before your time, but we had a new medicine on the market in the early 2000s called Viagra, the blue pill, the little blue pill. And but what they noticed with this medicine is that there was some serious repercussions for the heart when the medicine was used with certain heart medicines, in particular nitroglycerin. And so they involved cardiologists then in the rollout of the medication. And so I found myself doing a circuit, a speaking circuit in Alberta and in British Columbia as well, talking about Viagra, how it can be used, sexuality, safe practice kind of idea. And so it became kind of one of my things, you know. So I was actually, when you do that kind of thing, you're asked to see patients then, you know, your referral base. So, oh yeah, Fenske's the Viagra guy, get him to see that person. And generally speaking, in those days, people that suffered with erectile dysfunction were older men, and they had medical issues. They had diabetes or high blood pressure and the like, heart failure. And the medication was fantastic, you know, wonderful, you know, to be able to help people who were struggling in this fashion, you know, from a medical standpoint. But then what I noticed was in about 06, things began to change. And I was seeing younger people who didn't have diabetes, who weren't smokers, who didn't have high blood pressure. And it was a curious thing, you know, that I was seeing these younger men, you know, in their 30s, even in their 20s. And what came apparent then to me when I was talking with them and getting more information is that they were struggling with pornography. They had pornography addiction. And we can talk about that in more detail, how that can manifest in terms of erectile dysfunction. But this is a whole new area. And what happened in 06 then, what really I think that brought this to my attention was that the internet, high-speed internet became available at that point in time. And so people were able to consume pornography in vast volumes, much more than ever before. And so, you know, pornography is an ancient issue, you know, going right back to that, you know, the thermal baths of Pompeii, you know, we see those depictions there. So it's not like it's a new thing. You know, we just created this issue. No, not at all. It's ancient. Sin has been around, you know, since the fall of Adam and Eve, of course. But what's happened here is that we've taken this visual issue and just exploded it to exponential degrees, so that we find these kinds of problems and how it manifests.
It's important maybe for us to kind of set the foundation a little bit as we wade into this particular sin. Obviously, we would say that there's the foundational sin here is the lust of the heart, and this manifests itself in multiple different ways. Pornography, however, seems to be the modern day, right? Like you said, this is an ancient sin. This has been around since the beginning. It's not like, you know, lust is a new sin. And Jesus, of course, comes along and tells us that even if we lust in our hearts after another man's wife, that we've committed adultery in our heart. And so I often remind people that I'm discipling who have a tendency to think through sin in a really backward sort of way, where they think, well, you know, I lost my temper because this situational thing happened, right? I was looking at pornography because, you know, we just had a young child and my wife's not as available to me. And so we often think about opportunity as the thing that brings sin in, but the Bible is very clear. It's out of the abundance of the mouth, or out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, right? Sin develops in the heart, and the things that are in the world around us just pull out the sin that is there. And so we're talking about lust that's in the heart. And since 2006, as you pointed out, with the pervasiveness of pornography, it's almost as if that lust that's in the heart that manifested itself in a variety of different kinds of sins, whether it was promiscuity, adultery, fornication, all kinds of different things. And the Bible is very, very clear and speaks very directly to these kinds of things, right? That it's the fornicators and the homosexuals who will not inherit the kingdom of God, 1 Corinthians 6. But what pornography has done is it's sort of funneled all of the sexual sin and perversion that are in people's hearts into a particular area. And as you said, that area is now readily available. It's on our phones. It's on every device. You know, young kids as early as, you know, 8, 9 are now being exposed to this because they're given smartphones by their parents. That's a whole other topic. But, you know, it's amazing to me, like, and I'm a bit younger than you, Ted, but like when I was a young man full of, you know, hormone and lust and sin that needed to be put to death eventually, looking for this kind of thing, looking for an outlet for your sin was not an easy thing, right? It was in magazines. It was on the top shelf. It was all these things, but now it's just so pervasive that you can get people sucked into this at such a young age. So you used a term there that you said pornography addiction. So let's talk a little bit about what you mean by that, right? And because I know you, what we're not saying is that this is not sin, it's an addiction. It's not a disease, sin, it's sinful. But what do you mean when you use that term pornography addiction? How is it that the readily availableness of this has created an addiction to it?
Yeah, well, one of the areas in cardiology that I have quite a bit of experience in is addiction medicine. And so within addiction medicine, we have, for example, smoking, you know, nicotine, very pervasive in our heart population, and alcohol. But also in Edmonton and in most big centers, we've had, you know, the street drugs like fentanyl. We've had a terrible fentanyl epidemic for the last number of years. Our ICU actually had more fentanyl overdoses than COVID cases, you know, during the COVID pandemic. So it was quite a problem and remains so. So as part of that, then I've learned about addiction and the different the ugly side of medicine in terms of the addiction issues, and where addiction plays in then all of these drugs, nicotine, alcohol, fentanyl, crystal meth, morphine, cocaine, you name your poison, they all take advantage of a God-given reward pathway that we have in our brains. Which is a wonderful thing. It's actually how we learn. It's how we learn how to speak and how we learn how to play the guitar or to do other things, languages. It's this pathway then that works on a reinforcement or a reward circuit, where there's a certain behavior, there's a certain outcome, and that reinforces the repeat behavior again. And so these drugs, they hijack that pathway, if you like, this pleasure pathway, this seat of desire, this reward circuit. And as a result of that, it's an abuse of that natural pathway. And that natural pathway makes use of a certain neurotransmitter called dopamine. Dopamine, on exposure to a certain stimulus, is released into this pathway, and the dopamine has then certain effects in terms of reinforcing that activity. And so the amount of dopamine release then is directly proportional to how addictive a particular substance is. And so, for example, studying medicine is not addictive because it causes very little dopamine release. You know, and it's something you have to wait for years rather than these drugs, which can cause this dopamine surge immediately. So it's the amount of dopamine that's released, and it's the timeline between the activity and that release of dopamine. And the tighter that timeline is, the more addictive that particular substance is. That's why medications like smoking, where we inhale it, or heroin, where it's injected into the vein, or cocaine, where it's snorted into the nose, the nasal mucosa, there's very rapid uptake then of these drugs. And therefore, the dopamine surge is very rapid as well. You know, you do the activity and bang, there's the result. And so there's that creates a very high likelihood then that it's going to become an addictive problem. And then if we add to that the novelty, so novelty is another factor that can increase the addiction. We see that, for example, in food addiction. And with, because food also causes, you know, in a natural sort of way, you have a Twinkie and there's a certain dopamine surge there. And so the problem with food though, is that there's with our vast quantities and different types of foods, then like the dessert buffet, for example, best example, you know, that also can create new appetite then for food. And so even though one's had a full meal, you know, when it comes to the dessert table, we've all got room for, you know, a piece of chocolate cake or whatever else, because the novelty of the food overrides our satiety, our fullness. And so this is one of the problems with food addiction, but we see that elsewhere as well. And then the accessibility. And this is one of the problems with food addiction, again, is that the food's always readily available. It's right there always, you know, it seems. And people are grazing, you know, through the day. And the cigarette package is right there in your pocket, et cetera. So when we look at pornography then, in terms of these elements, pornography, when we compare it to those drugs that I mentioned, like nicotine, for example, morphine, cocaine, causes a dopamine surge, and it's rapid as well. So there's the exposure, the visual exposure, and bang, there's dopamine release, and a great quantity of release as well. And then if we add then to that amount of dopamine, the very brisk release, the novelty that pornography is, in terms of the availability, is an unlimited number of partners that people can have on their screen at any given moment. And with videos, et cetera, it's vast. And so the novelty is just beyond our comprehension, you know, and then the accessibility, you know, you got your laptop, you're at home, like bang, there it is. And so it's like the perfect storm for addiction. And so it's a God-given pathway, which is beautiful, and our own sexual experience makes use of this, you know, and it's a wonderful reward pathway, but it's hijacked, like, you know, by these drugs, and in particular by pornography, which many will refer to as the new crack cocaine, because the difference between pornography and any of those drugs that I mentioned, including crack cocaine, is that the pornography can maintain the dopamine level at a high level. When one takes a drug, there's a certain surge of dopamine, and then it's down. And in cocaine, for example, it's a very high surge, but then there's a very, very low nadir or bottoming out afterwards. And so people have the really super high, but then they have an incredibly as intense low. With pornography, with a click of a button, a click of the mouse rather, there's another image. And so the dopamine level can be maintained. And so there's a sustained ability then with the dopamine exposure with pornography versus anything else. And so therefore, pornography that's why it can have such severe manifestations like erectile dysfunction and the like, because it's just an overload. The system can't maintain that and it breaks down. And so the addiction potential there, although what you're saying is that, you know, the sin's driving this for sure, but it's taking advantage of a natural pathway, and it's incredibly powerful then. It's a monster. And when people say, well, you know, it's just a little pornography problem, you know, my little porn thing, nonsense. You know, pornography doesn't just stop at a little exposure. It grows and continues and it moves, and it's after you. And so by contrast to, you know, yesteryear when one had to search out pornography, now you turn on your computer and it searches out you.
Yeah.
So I go on, you know, Bible Gateway, I'm trying to look up a passage, you know, for Sunday, and there's a pop-up because there's a dating and the women are all kind of in certain positions and their eye contact. I mean, it's after me, you know, it's after us. And so we have to be really very aware then it's highly addictive and it's pervasive. And it's coming to get us.
The passage that comes to my mind just as you're talking about that, the you know, it's the dragon coming to get us, is you know, in Genesis 4, when God is talking to Cain and he says, you know, sin is crouching at your door and its desire is for you, is to have you, but you must master it, right? There's this this, you know, I think of pornography as sort of a dragon to be slain. But it's a dragon that's, like you said, constantly coming after you. And this is the Christian life. The Christian life is the reality that sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is to overtake you, to destroy your soul. And your job is to master it. And of course, in the New Testament, Paul comes along and he says, let nothing master you, right? Be a slave to nothing except Christ. And so there's this idea that what pornography eventually does. And so you just kind of painted this portrait of these I mean, these poor 20, you know, and 30 year old men who are suffering from erectile dysfunction, because the dragon has slain them, right? The dragon has overcome them. And here they are, this sort of defeated warrior that's been slain by the dragon rather than slaying the dragon itself. And that's what sin desires in each and every one of us. But God's, you know, admonition to Cain was, you must master it. So let's talk a little bit about, actually, one of the first things I kind of wanted to ask about is, when you're comparing pornography to drug addiction, right? One of the things that we were taught in school, you know, as the people came in and gave the, you know, don't do drugs talk and showed us the, you know, this is your brain, you know, shows a nice egg, and this is your brain on drugs, and it's a scrambled egg kind of thing. You know, one of the interesting things about pornography is that they're not getting those talks in school, right? Pornography really has become normalized in our culture to the point where, you know, I play sports and oftentimes you're talking with guys and the sort of locker room talk is often like, I'm always shocked at how unashamed men are at pornography. And, you know, we can point to old, you know, sitcoms in the 90s like Seinfeld and Friends that normalized these kinds of things. It was okay. Joey's a cool guy and Joey watches porn all the time kind of thing. And so it's been normalized in our culture. So number one, we don't have the sort of this is bad for you messaging that we did with drugs. And then talk a little bit, you would know more about this, is you know, obviously one of the things that happens with drug use is that you then need more you need a higher dose in order to release the same level of dopamine, right? The novelty there that you were talking about. And so this is of course what gets fentanyl users in overdosing, right? Because they need more in order to achieve the same high to get the same level of dopamine. What happens in pornography as the brain starts to get used to the dopamine that it's seeing?
Yeah, well, the hallmarks of addiction for anything, for any of the substances that I mentioned and pornography as well, is that there becomes a dependence on that. So we become dependent on it. There develops obsessive compulsive behaviors around it, around that, and often, you know, rituals around the smoking, around the cocaine, around the pornography use. And then there is this phenomenon called tolerance, which develops as well. And then finally, dysfunction. And that's often when they come into the emergency room with their fentanyl issues, when in the dysfunction phase, which is very, very sad. But those kind of are the four kind of pillars of, you know, yes, you've got an addiction here, you know, and it doesn't have to necessarily have all four at once, but it does move in that direction. When we have pornography exposure then in a repeated fashion, what happens is there are actual architectural changes that are occurring within this reward pathway. So it's one can imagine certain pathways, certain circuitry as like a path in the woods. You can see it, but you kind of have to look where your feet are going to kind of stay in the path. You know, it's not that well marked out. But over time, as there's more traffic on that particular path, it becomes quite a clear path, a wider path. Gets paved. It becomes a road. You can put a car down it. You can put a number of cars down it. It's a highway. And so over time, that little garden path turns into the Autobahn. And this high-speed pathway then it develops. And that actually requires architectural change within the brain. And you know, the actual, even our DNA is being expressed, being read in certain ways based on that activity, repeated, I'm talking about high volumes over and over and over. This pathway gets trod over and over and over and over and developed. And there are, you know, numerous players that are involved in this. And one is called Delta Fos B. And Delta Fos B is very interesting in that it helps. It's part of how the DNA, the RNA is made into protein. It's one of the factors there. And the problem with Delta Fos B is that it has a long half-life, we say. It lasts for a long time. And so if it's developed to a certain level, the Delta Fos B levels become very high. But then even if one stops the drug, even one stops the pornography, it's still high. It's still a high level. It's still maintaining that pathway. It's right there. And so that's one of the issues with the concerns with pornography then, is that because this circuit's so brisk and so developed that to get the same kind of dopamine release, you need more traffic down that. And so this is the tolerance issue. So no longer is it good enough just to look at Vogue magazine or just to look at a couple of pictures on the internet. No, one needs to have multiple pictures, videos, and actually people then are pushed into other areas of pornography, genres even. You know, so other types of, I don't want to go into detail because it makes me sick, but, you know, and even with children and with animals and, you know, this whole area of shame, because the interesting thing about this whole addiction is that it creates a guilt shame, but shame itself causes dopamine release. And so when you're maxed out with all these images going and you're still not getting it in terms of the dopamine amounts that you need to kind of have the same feeling, take the same response and forget getting an erection, that those days are gone. Like it's all just in the mind. You know, there's actually no satisfaction here, but you still want it, you know? And so to get that kind of level of dopamine, then we bring in shame and we visualize things they would never, ever think of visualizing before. And this is where we get into the whole area of, you know, the whole rape issues and everything that are online. You know, this is very disturbing that this is happening. And you're right, people have not necessarily normalized that, but they've normalized so much of the foundation that leads to that kind of thing. And this is one of the perfect storm elements then of our pornography problem, is that we're not just addicted to our phones, you know, looking at it every time, you know, the little text button goes off, I got to look at my phone, you know, excuse me, I'm in an important meeting, but I got to look at my phone. So we have that, you know, we're addicted to the darn internet and our phones and our devices, but then we have, you know, a hypersexualized society, which has normalized this. And then we have our censorship laws, which become very lax. So it's very interesting that, you know, during COVID, you'd be censored. I would be censored if I had any comment about the vaccine that was not with the narrative. But in terms of the sexual explicit material, that was being made available to our children, you know, in the schools in Alberta. And so it's a very interesting paradox then in terms of the censorship laxity that's occurred with this. And then we have a big business of pornography that's really where there's a bottom line that's driving this baby forward, you know, and it's not going to stop. So it's going to continue to be consuming people. And so we have to be aware of it. You know, we have to be aware that, you know, people say, well, you know, I mean, you know, a little bit of pornography, I'm not hurting anybody. You know, but, you know, really, it's desperately damaging the viewer. But there's a ripple effect then that's occurring. So the father who's you know, consuming pornography, there is an effect in terms of how he views his wife. There is an effect in terms of his children. And what if his children then will see as well? And often, you know, I've got cases, sadly, where, you know, the young man goes to his dad, you know, for help, and then finds out his dad's struggling more than he is with pornography, you know, and then there's the whole area in terms of how we view women, you know, in our society. And Marianne Layden from the from Pennsylvania, she was the director of the sexual harm and psychotherapy area, and she felt very strongly in her work that the pornography was one of the drivers for the whole rape culture that's developed, you know, and she's written books on the topic. And so, you know, this pornography doesn't just stop as an individual thing. It has a pervasive, damaging effect on our society and has to be taken seriously.
I think that's a really good warning for anybody who's listening, who maybe, you know, and I've counseled young men and talked to older men, who have, you know, been struggling with this particular sin, and that is their line. You know, what is this hurting anybody? You know, that they sort of justify it to themselves because their wives aren't as readily available to them. They have young children. You know, their wives are breastfeeding, whatever the case is, and they make these excuses. But that is the mentality. That's the lie that they tell themselves is what is this harming anybody, right? And I think you did a really good job at kind of showing that this is pervasive, right? It's a Romans 1 kind of thing where when you reject God's good design, it's progressive in its degradation, right? It gets worse and worse, right? If you read the progression in Romans chapter 1, it starts with, you know, the rejection of God, And it goes through, you know, worshiping created things rather than the creator. It talks about God giving them up to a debased mind, right? Foolish hearts being darkened. And it ends with this, you know, they're giving up their passions, they're giving up natural relations and going into perverted relations. And then they're demanding that others celebrate those things. So there's this degradation that's happening. And there's this pit that you fall into. And all of those things, I've talked to men who, you know, have teenage daughters. And these men have been struggling with pornography for so long that they cannot show their daughters the kind of good, godly, appropriate affection that they ought to, because their minds are so steeped in pornography. And so that's damaging their daughters. And that's going to actually perpetuate this, because young women who do not receive the affection of their father look for the affection of men in all other kinds of ways. And oftentimes it leads to early promiscuity and all kinds of stuff, which leads perhaps them into this lifestyle. And it just, the problem becomes pervasive. And what I often remind people of is the amount that, the phrase I like to use is, what's the blast radius, right? We think of it as, well, this is just my little sin that I can keep as long as it's not hurting anybody. But the blast radius is massive, right? You have this giant behemoth of the pornography industry that you are supporting. You are looking at somebody's daughter, maybe even somebody's wife, right? You are, you know, rewiring, as you said, your own mind, that you are now going to mistreat not only your wife, but all of the women in your life as you begin to look at them through the lenses of pornography and abuse and degradation. The blast radius for this is way bigger than people think. But one of the things I want to do is I want to connect, you know, one thing that the material of the Institute did for me, you know, before I ever got on staff or any of that kind of stuff, was I think a lot of times, as Christians in Western culture, we have a sort of dualistic mindset naturally, right? We tend to think of things as spiritual and physical, and we kind of gnostically divide those two things. So you've talked a lot about sort of the physicality, the physical the physical ramifications of pornography addiction. And some might sit there and say, okay, well, but deal with the spiritual part, deal with the sin. And what we would say is that these things are interconnected. There is no separation of the physical and the spiritual. All of this is together. And so when we talk about, you know, the fact that this is sin and it grieves the heart of God and it damages us and damages our lives, and it's also doing these things physically to us. We live in a broken world and sin infects and affects everything. And so the fact that sin can rewire your brain is absolutely part of the damaging effects of sin. So let's kind of talk about, how is it then that, let's say there's a listener who's thinking through and they're kind of right now a little shocked by the impact and you kind of laying out the ramifications of this what they've called in their own minds this little sin that's not really hurting anybody. How do you begin to overcome this in your life? How do you begin to you know, heal not only spiritually but also physically? How do you begin to heal that brain that's been rewired because of the sin?
Yeah, well, you know, the good news is that it can be. And so, and all of the, every single one of the detrimental problems that can happen physically, like the erectile dysfunction I mentioned at the beginning, can resolve without Viagra. You know, there's no need for drugs here. There's a timeline that's going to be required. And this is, again, analogous to any, you choose the poison that one's addicted to. And so I deal most with nicotine addiction. And so when one stops the last cigarette, there's about a 3-month period of time before they have normalcy. And even after that time, forever, they're going to be prone to be tempted for that cigarette. This is often how people go back to the smoking again. I said, have you ever quit before? I said, oh yeah, I quit for 10 years. Well, what happened? Well, I was at a bar and someone said, oh, do you want to have a drag? And I had one drag and yeah, no, now I smoke a pack a day. And it's very sad. But so they're always going to be, you know, the issue. And pornography is the same thing. So once one's had a pornography addiction, that will always be an issue. That's what I love about AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. the group of former alcoholics sitting in a circle, you know, saying, you know, I'm Ted, alcoholic 20 years, you know, dry 20 years. But they're still, I'm an alcoholic, I've been dry 20 years. So they're identifying themselves still as having that problem. It's never going to go away, even though they've been dry for 20 years. And pornography too. But the intense period then is the first 3 months. And there, it takes that much time for this rewiring to be unwired, if you like, to take that Autobahn and get it back into the nature path, you know, through the woods. And so there has to be a dismantling then of the delta phosphate, which has this long half-life. And it does happen. But there has to be a complete no exposure. You know, it's not like you can say, well, you know, I'll just have just a little exposure. You know, I won't do videos anymore, you know, and that doesn't work here. So in certain addictions, we have ways of helping this 3 month period of time. So we have, you know, for example, with nicotine addiction, you know, I can give patients a nicotine patch that they can put on. So they can still get the nicotine, but then they stop the actual habit of bringing the cigarette to the mouth. And then over the course of these 3 months, they can wean themselves off the nicotine, etc. And for the other drugs, we have such medicines as well that help with this very challenging phase. Then one's trying to, you know, get off the addictive substance. With pornography, this doesn't exist, and this is one of the problems with behavioral addictions, of which pornography is maybe the best example. We see it in gambling. And the same phenomenon is occurring in gambling as well, because, you know, gambling is a certain addiction within our society, but it just ramped up with the high-speed internet. And they, instead of, you know, pulling the lever, now they click a mouse button, and actually the addictive potential went up. But so there has to be a fast, you know, from the exposure, a complete fast. And I would say, because there's such a intertwining of pornography with the internet, I counsel people to have a fast from the internet. Now, people have to work, and then some of their work, you know, requires internet. Of course, there's ways of dealing with that, you know, where you use your internet within your work environment and public spaces. But no more, zero more internet at home. Nothing more. No more laptop at home. No more privacy with the computer. Zero. There has to be a complete fast. And unless there's a fast, unless people are serious about this, and they say, okay, enough is enough. I'm really in dire straits here. Unless they're at that point, it will continue, and it will just not stay the same. It's going to grow. And so they have to come to that point where they say, okay, that's enough. And they have to have, I would suggest, a complete fast. And when there's no more of that exposure, then the rewiring can occur. And as soon as there's the exposure again, just like as soon as there is another a smoking cigarette, then we start the clock again. So 3 months and it starts again now. So it's not like you kind of, you're halfway into your 3 months and now you just had a little bit of porn. No, you're back at the beginning again. Great ground, level zero now again. Time starting now. And so we have to take this very seriously. And where I've seen people, and I have many, many examples of young men who have victory in this area. But this is one area, this is one thing that they've all said consistently, that they've had a complete fast. Yeah. And that means no phone, no laptop. And it's quite a challenge. I'm not saying it's easy, but when we can do that, you know, I go for a walk with my dog. I don't bring my phone. I'm enjoying the nature around me, and it's my time to pray. And I listen for the Lord speaking to me. And it's a beautiful time. I don't want someone texting me during that time. You know, and so the reality is that you know, we want to hear the Lord's voice, not be completely bombarded by all these other voices as well. So there's other, and this is beyond pornography. This is just the internet in general, you know, but I think it's a wonderful tool. But I think here we have to take it very seriously and have that. Expect then there's going to be some time that's going to be required. It's not going to be an immediate thing. You know, you stop viewing yesterday, so today you should be fine, because these images are still there. They're in the mind already, and they'll come up, and the devil loves to show you reruns, you know, and loves to create this identity, this pornography identity for people, that, you know, this is just your problem. No one else has this problem, just you. And there's nothing that can help you except more pornography. Pornography is the only comfort you're going to be able to have here, you know. So just continue. This is the lie. And we have to have an identity, of course, that is founded on our relationship, our personal relationship with Christ. And so when we during these 3 months and beyond, what we need to be doing then is renewing our minds. We renew the mind, you know, by spending time in the Word. We renew our commitments to the Lord by being involved in church, not just on the periphery, but actually having relational involvement, ideally mentorship involvement. And there's a wonderful ministry that's developed out of Edmonton. Actually, it's internationalized online ministry for this particular area called Restored Ministry. And Matt Klein, former hockey player, has developed this. And it's a spectacular ministry for all people, and not just pornography, sexual challenges in every area, but it's a mentor-based focus. And so the person who's enrolled in the programs that they have a mentor, and they're grown up in their faith. Because the issue here at hand, as you mentioned at the very beginning, there's a faith issue going on here. There's an identity crisis happening here, and it's not just a matter of, you know, these certain triggers or these certain kind of coping mechanisms. They're important to recognize. I think if we don't recognize those things, then it's going to be harder to kill this monster. So it's important to know, you know, what are the triggers for me to, you know, go to my cigarette, or for me to go to my alcohol, or for me to go to my pornography. How do I cope with issues? You know, so the boss yelled at me, or, you know, I got a flat tire, or whatever happened. You know, how do I deal with, you know, the stressors in my life, whatever, my coping mechanisms? What is my identity? You know, do I really believe that I am my job, or that I am this, you know, this or that? And so those are important things to address. And as we do address that, this cycle, this vicious cycle of behavior, of pornography viewing, the guilt and shame that comes from that, and the distress that leads to, and then the more behavior and the more guilt and shame and the more distress in this vicious circle can be broken. It can be broken. And prayer is a wonderful way to break it, to come into that. But it needs to, prayer can just be inserted as part of the cycle too. And I've seen that happen with young people where they, you know, they have the guilt shame thing, they're praying, there's a certain relief, you know, but then they haven't addressed the triggers or their coping mechanisms or their identity, and the cycle continues again. The good news is that, you know, this is treatable. I have many, many cases of victory that I've talked with people about, but there's a timeline. And I think we have to take it seriously. And I think the church has a lot to say for this. And in particular, yeah, our relational mentoring opportunities.
It's interesting. Just obviously the our podcast here is coming off a short series that we did on family. We talked about what it means to be a father, what it means to be a mother, what it means to be parents, just the centrality of family in the biblical narrative. And it's interesting to me because you know, one of the other things we haven't talked about it in some of your examples of various addictions. Another form of addiction, which actually often goes hand in hand with pornography, is young men who are growing up addicted to gaming and video games and that sort of thing. And there's these little games on your phone now, as well as the big games that are kind of multiplayer and across the internet, and you're gathering a bit of a community online. And one of the things that I realized as I was kind of venturing into pastoral ministry and figuring out what young men need in order to be discipled and brought up into maturity is that men are made to take dominion. And one of the lies, one of the dangerous things about video games is that often that drive that God created men with to take dominion, right? To be that conquering hero who goes out into the world and helps put things underneath the feet of Jesus in victory. That desire, that good and godly desire, is redirected in a sinful way, and all of the good and godly desire for dominion gets spent and wasted in digital conquering, right? Digital heroism. And the same sort of thing happens here with pornography is that there's a good godly desire that God puts in every man's heart Testosterone is a good gift that God gave men, and it's meant to be spent on conquering, and it's meant to be spent on, you know, nurturing and pursuing a wife and raising children and all of that kind of stuff. It's meant to be the strength, you know, that sort of drives dominion forward. And what ends up happening with men who are addicted to pornography, particularly young men, is that that sort of drive for a wife, a drive to get married, to have kids, gets diminished because they have a digital harem, right? They have a digital harem that would make, you know, Solomon jealous, and so they spend their testosterone, they spend their godly energy on, and they waste it. They spill it, and it's sort of wasted. And so one of the things that I often say is that we need to redirect those good godly creational things that he's placed in us. And one of the things that I say to young men all the time is that, you know, pursuing a wife, you know, when you are young is actually a good thing that can actually save you from a lot of this stuff. Now, don't get me wrong. Married men struggle with pornography just as much as single men. I'm not saying that. And I'm not saying that you should simply pursue a wife in order to stave off the temptation to sin. But Paul actually says, you know, if you're burning with passion, if you're burning with desire, you should get married, right? There is a godly outlet to this. So I want to kind of circle back to something that you said at the very beginning, and I think these things are interconnected, is you said the church has not done a very good job at teaching kind of unashamedly, without blushing, what a biblical sexual ethic is, right? Sex is a good gift that God has given in marriage. And I find, especially when I'm doing pre-marriage counseling and stuff, I have young people who are very shocked that their pastor is going to, you know, very plainly talk to them about sex and the good gift that sex is and how to cultivate a good and healthy sex life that's mutually satisfying and God glorifying. And so I just wonder, you know, you're an elder, so you've obviously talked from sort of the medical side of things, but even as an elder, how can the church get better at sort of giving a better vision, right? If the world is saying, you know, you're free to explore all of your sexual deviancy in your, you know, 6x6 room with high speed internet, you know, how has the church failed to kind of put a better vision before us of biblical sexuality?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's the allegory of Song of Songs that I mentioned, but really it's important then for us to be able to, you know, preach from the pulpit and in our groups, you know, young adult groups and men's ministry groups, whatever, to have opportunities to have these discussions explicitly, but to begin them with recognizing that really when we're talking about our human sexuality, you know, this is a God-given gift, and it actually reflects God's very nature, and it is something to be celebrated, and it is a beautiful thing. So I think of the acronym CROSS, CROSS, because I love the centrality of the cross for all things. But when I think of the biblical sexuality and how it reflects God's very nature, I think of the C as the creative element. You know, children are a gift from God, and they are a reward. And so, you know, in our society now, where abortion is just, you know, rampant, you know, this we have to encourage people to have children and raise them in a godly fashion. This is a beautiful thing. And I have three sons. You have children. It's really the making of me, really. And on a certain level, I've learned more about myself and my relationship with God because of my boys. You know, they teach me things. And I think one can have be very fulfilled without having children. I don't mean that, but at the same time, it's a beautiful element. And the R of the cross is the relational element. This is we're supposed to be in covenantal relationship. This is where sexuality is protected. You know, God blesses the sexual relationship between husband and wife in a monogamous marriage arrangement, and this is how it's protected, like a fire. You know, everyone likes to sit by a fire. It's so cheery to look at. You can roast marshmallows or whatever, but you need to have it protected. If it's not protected within you know the bounds, then your house is on fire and it's no fun. It's destroying and destructive. And likewise with sexuality, when it's outside of the bounds that God has laid out very clearly in the Bible, this is how, you know, we are to experience it. When it's outside of that, then, I mean, where would we be with our country and pop songs if there wasn't the broken heart, you know? And so we'd have all those achy, breaking heart songs we'd be missing. And this is all a result of sexuality going outside the confines. And so the relational element and the one flesh, the one flesh fidelity, where the husband, wife, and the Holy Spirit is that third, Solomon's third chord that binds them fast together. This fidelity then is so critical, and there can be no other, just this one. And I've been married now for 36 years, and you know, it's I think I'm more in love with my wife now than I ever was, but it's a beautiful thing, and it's just her only, and this fidelity is so critical. And the first S is the self-giving, the submission, you know, as per Ephesians 5, where we submit to each other as to the Lord, you know. And so the husband has a role, the wife has a role, both in submitting to each other, and this self-giving. And then the final S is the sacredness. We, per Hebrews 13, we are to keep the marriage bed pure. And this is why, you know, when we have pornography come into this beautiful, you know, reflection of God's very nature, you know, we see the distortion right off the bat. And people say, well, what about masturbation? Isn't that just fine? Well, how does masturbation, how is that creative? You know, how is that relational? You know, it's actually impersonal. How is that a fidelity to the Holy Spirit? You know, God glorifying? No. How is that self-giving? No, it's just self-taking, self-gratifying. How is that sacred? No, it's profanity. And the other issue with masturbation, just on the side, is that, you know, I don't think it's possible to masturbate to climax without lustful thoughts in one's mind. I don't think it's possible. And so good luck on that one, you know. And Jesus said, you know, just not to even have the lustful thoughts. And even with the lustful thoughts alone, without the masturbation point, you've already committed adultery. So let's not play games, you know, with that kind of thing. God is very clear in the Bible in terms of what he blesses. He blesses the monogamous heterosexual relationship between husband and wife and chastity. And it's chastity before and fidelity after marriage. That this is healthy sexuality, and it's a beautiful thing. It's what I think the church needs to explain, why it's a beautiful thing, and so that we can be attracted to that and not be attracted to the devil's lies.
Yeah, and even as you talk about, you know, you said don't play games here, right? We've already said that pornography is one of the many dragons in the world that is a sin that is trying to capture you, devour you. And to kind of play those games of saying, well, I won't do this, but I will do this, is like saying, well, I'm not going to let the dragon eat me, but I will look for refuge under its wings, sort of speak. You know, like this is an enemy, right? We don't make peace with the enemies of God. We don't make peace with those who are trying to devour us. It's slay or be slain. And the only thing I wanted to kind of end with was you mentioned it. It made me think of Ephesians 5, right? It says there, it's talking about, you know, wives, submit to your husbands. Husband, love your wives. Lay your life down for her. You know, being involved in sanctification. It says, for this reason, if a man will leave his father and mother, cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. And then Paul says something that I think is just absolutely, we forget it. We it's not talked about nearly as much as the rest of it. We skip down to the love and respect part, which is important. That's the application of his little sermon there. But he says, this mystery is profound, and I'm saying that it refers to Christ in the church. So specifically talking about the one flesh union, right? Marital intimacy. God says, this is a reflection of Christ in the church, right? The indwelling of the Spirit of God in the people, right? This is that Ephesians 2 picture that we are being built into. Christ is the cornerstone. We are stones being built into a dwelling place for the Holy Spirit. And it's like, you know, the fact that the husband goes into the wife is actually a physical picture of Christ indwelling his bride, indwelling his people. And when you think about, you know, what is ultimately Satan's defeat? It's the fact that the Spirit of God indwells his believers, right? Paul says in Romans 16 that the God of peace will soon crush Satan underneath your feet, right? Under the Spirit-empowered feet of the church, God is going to crush the snake. And so you put all that together and you realize, why is there such a an attack on sexuality. Why does God hate, or why does Satan hate marriage? Why does Satan hate marital intimacy? Well, it's because it reminds him. It's the picture of his own demise. And when Satan knows that he cannot attack the king, what does any peasant who can't attack the king do? He burns him in effigy, right? And so Satan will attack marital intimacy. He'll attack biblical sexuality. He will attack good, healthy biblical sex, and he'll pervert it in any way that he can because he hates the image of Christ indwelling his church, because Christ indwelling his church is what guarantees the church's victory in history. So, yeah, anything you want to add as we wrap up here?
Well, I think the relational step forward with mentorship is so critical, and really it's an opportunity to grow one's faith and go deeper in one's faith, and it can be a wonderful thing. And those people who have struggled here in pornography, they can have a remarkable role, a tremendous role to help others. And this is where I mentioned the Restored Ministry. This is how they work. You know, they have a mentorship program, but then the person being mentored becomes the mentor. And this is there's a potential. You know, one might say, well, why me, Lord? Why do I have this sin in my life, or whatever? Well, maybe, you know, the Lord's got a remarkable plan for you to help others, you know, in this area. Because if one has struggled in an area, there's a level of credibility and practical solutions, you know, that one can help to bring into these areas with the Bible as the foundation. And that is the critical element, you know, that has to be there as we have our personal relationship with Christ. And that is who I am. And that is where I draw, you know, my understanding of reality, how I know things, and my moral standard from, then we are in a better position, you know, to be able to go forward. And there are other resources too. And one book that comes to mind is Heath Lambert's Finally Free. And a lot of men that I've talked to have really benefited from this Christian, you know, address of the pornography issue. And it's encouraging because they're, you know, while we don't want to leave people thinking that, well, there's nothing that can be done for me, you know, I'm hopeless. Not at all. No, there's a tremendous opportunity here, incredible opportunity, actually. And I would just encourage people then to take their faith seriously as the beginning point, and to go deep in their recommitment to Christ, their recommitment to the Bible, their recommitment to the community of faith, relationally, and move forward that way.
Amen. We often say at our church that for sin to grow, it often needs secrecy and opportunity, right? That's the fertile soil that sin grows in. And so two things that you've hit on is, you know, choke out the opportunity, right? Get fast, get the computer out of your house, get the internet off your phone, whatever the case is, you know, choke out the opportunity. And then don't allow secrecy. Find accountability, whether it's Restore Ministries, which is a great ministry, whether it's an elder or deacon or a small group leader in your church. Divulge this. Don't let this be your own secret sin that you're trying to overcome on your own. This is why God gives us community. So secrecy and opportunity. So don't let it be a secret and choke out the opportunity. And ultimately, you talked about, you know, you have a tremendous opportunity then to be a blessing to those who are similarly afflicted. And that brings to mind 2 Corinthians 1. Right? God is the God of all comfort, comforts us in our affliction that we might be of help to those who are similarly afflicted. And this is a pervasive problem. And so if you can, by the Spirit of God, get free from it, you will be equipped to be a freeing agent to go into the world and help the rest of us who are still in bondage. And so be hopeful. Don't allow the secrecy. Don't allow the opportunity, and overcome. Slay this dragon. Don't let it slay you. And obviously, Ted, his ministry in the Institute, if you have young people, again, get them around guys like Ted. Send them to our Worldview Leadership Academy. Send them to our Cultural Leadership Academy, so they can get this kind of teaching and these kinds of men influencing them, so that we can free the next generation from this thing that is so entangled the church and so much made the church impotent in our time. So Thanks for your time, Ted. I love doing ministry with you. I love chatting with you. Quickly, why don't you just tell some people, you wrote a book that's available on Ezra Press, Keeping Faith in Medicine. But where else can people kind of follow you or get information from you?
Thank you. I do a fair amount of writing with the Ezra Institute, and so I've written a number of papers that try to hit the hot button issues of faith, medicine, interface, and pornography is one of them. So, yep. I have a paper that details these issues that we talked about in a written form, and so that would be I would just reiterate the importance of our residential opportunities as well. And that we do want to meet with people too, because there's a relational element to it. But we will be having our talks will be made available online in time. We'll have a portal, and people will be able to access materials online of our lectures. And but there in the interim, there are these papers that are available on the Ezra website.
That's right. If you just search Ted Fenske's name on EzraInstitute.com, you'll find papers and articles that he's written in past Jubilee magazines, blog posts, all kinds of stuff. So thanks so much, Ted. I'll remind all our listeners that, as always, from him and through him and to him are all things. We'll see you again next week.